It's time for another edition of the Better Health Radio Show. And last couple of weekends, we had the cricket commentary on. This weekend, it's not on, so we are going to go headlong into our program this evening. And we've got Dr. K.O. Fortune Hill. She is our presenter this evening. So let's see if we can raise her and say a special good evening to her. Good evening.
Good evening, Gregson. Yeah, how are you?
I can see you smiling so sweetly. Yes, I'm good, thank you. Hope you're good, too.
Yes, I've been having a great day, and I just want to say happy Mother's Day to all of the mothers and mother figures who are listening and joining us today.
Right, and hope you had a great Mother's Day as well, too, because I'm thinking you are a mom, too, correct?
Yes, I am. There you go. I am.
All right.
One very, very interesting little girl.
All right. Well, happy Mother's Day to you as well.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much. So today I have with me Dr. Rashida Daisley, and I'm going to tell you a little bit more about Dr. Daisley in a bit, but we're just going to remind our listeners why we're here. So again, good evening and a warm welcome to all of you on this Mother's Day here on the Better Health Radio Show. And remember, it's a show which is aimed at raising public awareness of common health issues that affect us all. And as Gregson said, I am Dr. K.O. Fortin Hill, and it is my pleasure to be your host this evening. We are very much looking forward to an engaging and interactive session this evening. And I take this opportunity to remind you that you can contact us. Remember, this is a call-in radio show. This is not a lecture. And you can call us with your questions and your comments. You can either reach us by calling 434-1790. That's 434-1790. Or you can actually send your WhatsApp messages to 266-4862. That is 266-4862. So we are looking forward to hearing from you today as we discuss. I mean, it is Mother's Day, so we're going to talk about a topic that is kind of unique to women. And I think we touched on this earlier in the year, but we're looking at it from another point of view. We're going to be discussing endometriosis. Somebody's probably like, that's a big word. Endometriosis. It's been a watchword in the last couple of years, which I'm very glad about. And that is because of the public health advocacy of persons such as my guest, Dr. Rashida Daisley. Now, Dr. Daisley is a public health practitioner. She's a medical doctor. She's an educator. She's a women's health advocate. And she is currently the president of the Barbados Association of Endometriosis and Polycystic Ovarian Syndrome. So the Barbados Association of Endometriosis and PCOS. Dr. Daisley is one of my good friends, and I am in awe at her knowledge at all times. Welcome, Dr. Daisley.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you so much, Dr. Fortin Hill, for having me. And first of all, happy Mother's Day to all the mothers out there, and I'm really happy to be here today.
Good. All right. So, Dr. Daisley, what I call the big word, and I know there are a lot of our listeners who are probably like, I hear people saying this all the time, but I'm not really sure what it is. What is endometriosis?
Okay, so I totally agree with you. It's a big word. Sometimes people mash up the word itself.
Correct.
So I'm just going to explain a little bit about what it is. So first of all, cast your minds back maybe to your secondary school biology, where we all would have heard about the menstrual cycle. And even if you didn't do biology in secondary school, you know what ladies go through every month when we have our menstruation and shed every month. So what we're shedding is the endometrial lining, which is the inner part of the womb that kind of builds up and prepares our body for pregnancy, which is where we're celebrating Mother's Day today. So what What happens in endometriosis is that tissue that's very similar to this endometrial tissue implants where it shouldn't be. So it should be housed in the womb itself and shed every month. But what can happen is it can implant on places, for example, on the bowel, it can implant on the bladder, it can implant, there have been cases on the lungs, it can implant in the inner lining of the tummy as well. And it causes these ladies a lot of pain, cyclical pain. So every time the menstruation comes around, you'll have pain related to that. And sometimes they can also have pain outside of the cycle as well, and it can cause them a lot of discomfort.
Okay. Yes. So it might have gone without saying, but I'm just going to reiterate it by asking again, you know, repetition is how we learn. But who then would be affected by endometriosis, or who can get and develop endometriosis?
So women are the ones who can have endometriosis, and it affects women of reproductive age. So once you start to have your periods, then you would notice that you may have like very severe periods. And typically the symptoms can go away after menopause. I guess we get a little bit more into the complications associated with endometriosis, but not everything will go away with menopause.
Right. Okay. So it's women only. But men, I still want y'all to listen, because you have daughters, you have nieces, you have partners. So I want you to be aware. And then it's mostly women. It's women, most of the symptoms then would occur in women of reproductive age. So women who have periods.
Yes,
so
basically.
Anywhere from, we know there are, you know, some unfortunate young ladies who start having their period when they're like 8 and 10.
It was unfortunate.
All the way. Yeah, me too. I was one of those.
Yeah.
I was one of those. All the way up to in their 50s when they actually go into menopause. So that's a long time to be in pain or have complications, because that's not 2 mornings. That is a long time. So I want to stress to our listeners that this is a chronic condition. Right?
Yeah.
So we always talk about non-communicable diseases. We always talking about, you know, high blood pressure, diabetes, but we don't really consider these things, that these other disorders that are chronic and they have long lasting and debilitating effects, you know, exactly. Similarly. Like the others. So this is why this is important. Sorry.
Yeah. No, ahead. Just kind of reiterating that. So that's why the work that BAPE does, the Barbados Association of Endometriosis and PCOS is a long word. So we call it
is BAPE. Okay.
Yes.
BAPE. I like that.
So that's why the work of BAPE and other charities that advocate for endometriosis are so important, even in the Barbadian context and internationally.
Right. Yes. Because to be honest with you, Dr. Daisy, yes, I would have learned about endometriosis in medical school. I would have come across patients who had endometriosis. But I think a lot of the work, a lot of the knowledge that I have gained in the last couple of years. Wait, how long has BAPE been in existence?
I'm moving to NGO from 2016.
Right. Yeah. So in the last 7 years, a lot of what I have learned has actually been as a result of BAPE, because y'all are so present on social media. And you know, when you do ask me to speak, I think that causes me to have to go and do some research and get up to date. So I'm actually very, very glad for the work that BAPE is doing. So, and for our listeners that might not have caught it, BAPE is the Barbados Association of Endometriosis and PCOS, and it is a charity. This is a nonprofit. You know, it is all about advocacy and education and, you know, just helping out those who unfortunately may have been diagnosed with endometriosis.
Yes.
So we already established it's when the lining of the uterus, which we usually shed every month when we have a period, occurs somewhere outside of the womb.
Yes.
And I believe you had mentioned some of the places, but you know, tell us some of the most common places that some of that tissue may be deposited.
So occur. Sure. So it would all deal with the proximity to the room. So the most common places would be the areas that are very close to the womb. So for example, the fallopian tubes, the ligaments that kind of adhere the womb to the pelvis. And then going from there, you would have areas such as the bowel as well as the bladder as well. And obviously the inner aspect of the abdomen, which we call the peritoneum, and that's just the like inner lining of the tummy, basically. So those are the most common places that it could occur, and we actually don't know what causes it. So there are some theories that say that there's what we call back. Retrograde menstruation. So what happens is that, as we have our periods, everything comes out and it would go onto the pad or whatever device we're using. But that particular theory states that the lining goes back up into the abdomen, and then that's how it adheres. But we're not entirely sure if that's 100% sure, because there are places which are definitely not connected to the abdomen that endometriosis has occurred. We mentioned before the lungs, person exactly, and that could not happen from there. There's been one case before where it's been found on the brain. Yeah, so that's also not going to be related to
No,
that
not
theory.
connected.
Yeah.
No. So there have to
Yes.
be other things that contribute to it. Well, I'm sure that as research goes on, because 10 years ago you didn't hear that much about endometriosis. So we've come very far. We have a long way to go, but I am confident that we will get more answers as time goes on. So let's say you have a mother listening, she has a teenage daughter who complains for painful periods. That's probably a symptom. But what other symptoms might lead you to believe that what somebody was occurred that is not a normal period, that this may be endometriosis?
Yeah, so we didn't even really fully touch on what the symptoms are. So you mentioned their pain associated with the periods. And one of the biggest pet peeves that we kind of have here at Babe is when persons say, "Oh, you just have a bad period, go and lay down and take two Panadol and you'll be fine." But you having some pain or some discomfort during your menstruation is normal, but having pain that you can't go to work, that you can't get out of bed, that you're vomiting all day, you can't be productive at all, that's not normal. So these are the types of pains that will kind of clue us into it could possibly be endometriosis. But not all cases of very severe periods are caused by endometriosis. We do know as physicians that when we start having our periods, what we call menarche, that those periods tend to be very, very painful. But that would tend to become a little bit improved as a young lady continues to have periods. But if we're noticing that they're not having any relief as the years go on, that could clue us in to the fact that it may be endometriosis. Another symptom that could occur is that the pain may not only be related to the period. Some ladies with endometriosis have pain constantly, because of the inflammation that's associated with endometriosis. That doesn't all just resolve as soon as the period goes away. Sometimes you continue to have pain related to that as well. I'm not sure if this particular symptom will be relevant to the age group that you asked me the question about initially, but for ladies who are of age and they engage in certain activities, the activities also can be painful as well. So that can also clue them into that could be a possibility. We can also.
So we can extend it to all the women in reproductive age. So you're saying that that pain during sex can also be sexual intercourse can be a symptom as well.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. And also, depending on where the endometrial implants are, for example, earlier I would have mentioned that they can implant on the bowel. So sometimes you may notice that you may have pain when you urinate, or that could be a UCI too. So I don't want to just say, oh, every pain when you pass water is that. But also, you can also notice that you may have increased frequency, also a symptom of UTI. And you can also have pain with defecation, which is pain when you're passing stool as well can also be related.
So you did say some you did a UTI is a urinary tract infection, just for our listeners. And frequency, meaning that you're going to the bathroom to pass water more often.
Yes, than your baseline. Yes. And it's very also very interesting that obviously we're having this conversation today on Mother's Day. Oftentimes, one of the symptoms that kind of causes persons to be diagnosed is infertility. So it definitely can impact a lady's fertility. And sometimes ladies may then come to the gynecologist when they're noticing that they're not able to get pregnant. And then at that point, it may be diagnosed or maybe suggested. So those are some of the symptoms that we may notice.
Because I find, particularly in our culture, and not just talking about Barbados, but when you read literature, even regionally and internationally, you recognize that usually infertility is one of the reasons that women are actually diagnosed, because that's the only reason they actually went to the doctor, because they could not get pregnant, because they were having difficulty getting pregnant or keeping or maintaining a pregnancy, because we get a lot of what you mentioned before, which is you have painful periods, take 200 dollars and go lay down or push through, which works for some people, but there's some people that Panadol says nothing for that pain.
Especially ladies with endometriosis, Panadol is they will laugh at that. I'm telling you, it will not do anything. They often have to escalate to very strong medications that we may restrict to only surgery. This is how intense the pain is. They have to use these very, very heavy duty medications.
Okay. So let's talk about the Barbados Association of Endometriosis and PCOS. Tell us about it, because some of our listeners probably never heard of and they would have heard me mention, that they just, a couple of things about what y'all do, but let me let you speak about it.
Sure. So BAME, as we affectionately call it, it's the Barbados Association of Endometriosis and Polycystic Ovarian Syndrome. And we were founded in 2016 by a group of ladies initially who would have had endometriosis and kind of connected with one another and sharing their stories, understood that, as you mentioned, Dr. Forsyth Hill, that there was not much information about it available both internationally and here in Barbados as well. So they began advocating for ladies with endometriosis and then also polycystic ovarian syndrome, and it kind of grew from there into a larger entity. So we have a board, and we also have officiating members as well. So I'm the president. We have our vice president, Shantae Ward, and our founder, one of those ladies who would have come together in 2016, Mrs. Julia Mandeville, is a superstar. She is a superstar.
And I went to school with Julia, and Julia has educated me so much on endometriosis. She is a rock star.
She is.
Yeah.
So we advocate in various different spheres. So pre-COVID, we had many walks where we would go on walks in March, which is a month that commemorates endometriosis. We've also had many medical conferences, which I think has been pivotal to our contribution. So we've had about two medical conferences on endometriosis and two on polycystic ovarian syndrome. Because one of our big values is capacity building within the Barbadian context. So we really try to ensure that we're helping facilitate increased knowledge within the medical community. And we also advocate for persons living with endometriosis as well. We do have a friends and family group where we would share stories, share resources as well. So we do quite a bit.
Okay. It sounds like y'all do a lot. Dr. Daisy was talking about, the walks that they have during endometriosis month, and their color is yellow. So if you ever see persons on social media, I'm wearing yellow for the endo warriors, that's what they're talking about, right? So I just want to remind our listeners that we want to hear from you. Is this the first time you've heard about endometriosis? Were you confused hearing that word? I know some people can't even pronounce it, and that is okay. It's a big word, but we want to hear from you. This is interactive. You can call us at 434-1790. And you can send WhatsApp messages to 266-4862. So Dr. Daisley, a young woman has some of the symptoms that we spoke about, right? They're maybe in their 20s or 30s, maybe in their 30s, having difficulty getting pregnant. They do have a history of having painful periods. and pain between the periods. And this is real pain. That's something I just want to stick a pin here for that,
Yes.
because there are a lot of persons I don't think really appreciate how much pain persons that have endometriosis have, and it's really shrugged off and not taken seriously. And I want to reiterate that it is real pain. They're not making it up. They're not just don't want to work or don't want. I mean, like, yes, we all would love a pampered life, but I mean, they're not very many. The average woman is not gonna stay home because they have their period. If somebody cannot work, cannot do anything when they're having their period, it means that there is something that is wrong, because the truth is our bodies were made for this, right? So what should they do? Just what, and I know it might seem like a simple question, but who, where should they go if you're having these symptoms?
So definitely to their physician. So you can start with your primary care physician, but ultimately the diagnosis would have to be made by a gynecologist. And this is important. This is where importance of advocating for yourself as a patient comes in. So the literature or the research has shown that the time to diagnosis of endometriosis is up to about 8, 9 years, and that's internationally. So we don't even know what that is within the regional context. But
Right, it's
that's
probably longer.
exactly, and that's quite a while to be suffering in pain. As we mentioned, this is serious pain for ladies, and that 8 to 9 years is quite a long time. So as I mentioned, just speaking to your primary care physician or your gynecologist is ideal. So we can talk a little bit more about the diagnosis perhaps of endometriosis. Yes. So the diagnosis gold standard for diagnosis is what we call a laparoscopy, and that's what we call small cut surgery. So I hear lots of patients referring to it as that.
Our
And
keyhole surgery,
yes. So basically what the surgeons would be doing is basically just taking a lot within the abdomen, as I mentioned. That's where the little tissue implants, so that they can physically see. There are other ways that they may be able to detect some signs of endometriosis. Ultrasound may be able to detect things such as chocolate cysts. So these are cysts that occur on the ovaries that become quite large, and they're filled with this material that looks like chocolate. So that's why it's called chocolate cysts. But if the endometrial implants are very small, the ultrasound may not be able to kind of pick that up. So this is why the keyhole surgery may be the ideal. There are some modalities like MRIs as well, which is like another imaging form that can also detect some implants as well. But that's why the time to diagnosis can be so long, because obviously these things take resources. Yes, keyhole surgery is not something that's inexpensive, and it takes highly skilled professional to do so. And even things like the MRIs, which may be able to pick up some implants, those are also quite expensive as well. So these things are all prohibitive, and that's why it's important to have persons advocated not only at the patient level but also at the policy level to kind of break those barriers and increase healthcare
Agreed.
access.
Agreed. All right, so we're gonna stick a pin right there. We have a caller.
Yes, we do have a caller. But before I forget, because you know what it is with me, a previous caller wanted me to ask you if you can get cancer from endometriosis. That was a question she wanted to pose to you, but she wanted to run away, so she left me with the task of asking you that. And then we've got the
Okay,
caller.
so we'll tackle that after this caller.
All right, go ahead, sir.
Yes, hi, good evening. How are
Good
you? How are you,
evening.
ladies? All is
We
everybody?
are fine. How are
Well,
you?
we're
Oh, glad to
well.
hear. All of my fineness comes from you. I really want fineness to be over you and just stay fine, you know. And I want to add some fineness to the program as well. What about if, because it seems to me that it relates to the mucus, which is a form of inflammation. Because if the lining of the uterus, which is inflamed or which has that irregular placing of it based on the fact of the what endometriosis is, I was wondering if there were any if there was any medication or any supplements that can help it, you know. Obviously you mentioned the pain medication, but in terms of turmeric or any of the other anti-inflammatory supplements or even drugs such as Daflon, which can then help the blood flowing to said organ and to said lining, so that the mucus would not be so much, so that the body's response to injury with its inflammation, the mucus would be at a lower level or would be decreased to such a fact that it isn't as painful or the symptoms are not as severe. I wanted to know that, and I have another question as well. You want me to answer it now? You want me to ask it now? Or are you going to answer?
Sure, go ahead. I've taken a note. Yeah.
Okay. Very well. Yes, thank you. So the second question is, based on, so it deals also with the fact that women are rendered sometimes infertile, and they are they also have this severe pain. You mentioned that it was placed on the brain and on the lung. So in the common woman, there's no cure for it, but is there anything that can help it in terms of, like, even taking hormones or other intravenous methods that can help it to not necessarily go away but to be lessened? And I was just wondering, this just came to my mind, if a man has surgery and tries to become a woman, that total sex change, is it possible for him in today's society where LGBT and so on is very is getting really out there, more people are trying it, more people are entering into that kind of lifestyle, can that woman now get endometriosis? Just wondering. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for your questions. You've raised many topics. I think the overarching one that for his first two questions, basically, if we get into how can it be managed, but so we don't forget, the caller basically wanted to know, Dr. Daisy, if, you know, there are natural things like turmeric, which we know is has anti-inflammatory benefits, if things like turmeric, and I guess you would want to know about supplements as well, if those can help with the symptoms of endometriosis, as well as there's something else he was mentioning about that.
He also asked about other anti-inflammatory, like, prescription medications. Right. So first of all, I just want to commend the caller. I love when male callers get involved and asking questions about these type of issues. So kudos to you, and thank you so much for your questions. They were very interesting questions. So the first one has to do with turmeric and the, supplements that may be anti-inflammatory and their contribution. So yes. So one, yes, there is a portion of endometriosis that is inflammatory, and that comes after the implants, which are also going to be stimulated by the lady hormones. And
which I wanted to clarify as well, because we can't say mucus, which is what we know traditionally. We think about a cut, an inflammation, which is really pus. But it's not mucus, just so that the listeners are aware. We are literally talking about the same endometrial tissue, the blood, quote unquote, that comes out when you're having your period. These are the deposits that we're talking, the cells that produce that same quote unquote blood, because that's probably the easiest way for people to think about it, are somewhere other than in the womb. So it's not really mucus.
Yes. And so there's definitely no mucus that's there in the tummy trying to get out. So we don't want that to be in your mind. Right. But as I mentioned, the lining, they become inflamed, no mucus, they just become inflamed, that can cause pain. So the turmeric and so on, these supplements, they can play a part. I don't think that, well, they won't cause a significant improvement in pain. So I just want to kind of put that out there. Yeah. The prescription anti-inflammatory medications, for example, Voltaren, those can help with the pain as well, normally for more milder levels of endometriosis. But as I mentioned earlier, sometimes when the pain is very high, these medications often don't work, and they may need a lot stronger medications to help manage the symptoms. So that was one aspect. The second one, well, the first one was actually if there was an association with cancer. And there hasn't been, according to the literature, there hasn't been any association between endometriosis and cancer. So don't want to say that. And then
No.
the last question had to do with trans women, if I'm
Yes,
right.
he was asking if someone has gender reassignment surgery
Yes.
and becomes a man, becomes a woman, if then they would be able, or not able, because they make it seem like something desirable, but if it is possible for that trans woman to have endometriosis.
So no. So
Right.
basically that would still they would not have a womb. So there's no
Exactly.
endometrial lining to shed. But on the other side, though, if we have a trans man, for example, if a female now
Right.
transitions to a man and they had endometriosis before their transition, they will likely still have symptoms of endometriosis. The caveat to that is the last point he actually mentioned, he was asking about hormonal
Yes.
treatment. So the endometrial lining is also very stimulated by the endometrial, by the hormone, the lady hormones. So we can use hormonal medication to kind of reduce those levels of lady hormones, and that actually is one of the ways that we can manage endometriosis. So that's one of the ways beyond surgical intervention that we manage it. And coming back to the point regarding the trans man would all obviously be on medication to reduce their levels of lady hormones and increase their levels of male hormones. So that may also help to manage their symptoms, but the trans man can still have symptoms of endometriosis. So those were very interesting questions.
Yes, that are, they call it raise some very interesting points, and it just shows how little is known about this illness, because it's confusing even for us as medic, and I say us because we're part of the medical fraternity. Generally, I find, outside of the gynecologists, there are a lot of us as medical practitioners don't even know a lot beyond the basics of endometriosis. We know it in theory, and we probably know, okay, pain, infertility, but there are actually a lot of things as far as the management that I think we could go a little further with. And we have another caller. Oh, yay.
They have me busy here. Who's not complaining that, Lane Game Show is not back on as yet?
No,
They're trashing me for playing a calypso earlier this evening. Gotta do what we have to do. Just want you to know that we are given instructions, we follow those instructions, and yeah, it happens like that sometimes. So I'm sorry that you didn't appreciate the clip, so but we had to do it. It was instructed. All right, that's number one. Number two, I've got a caller on the line, and yes, the No Name Game Show will come back, and it will let you know when it's coming back. All right, so don't be too hard on me this evening, and they weren't very they were on me this evening. Anyhow.
Oh,
Caller, I'm going to come to you
man.
in a second. I've got a query for you, Dot. Let me hope I can pronounce these words. It says, "Good evening. I am curious to find out why there's never any mention of adenomyosis." Did I get that right? Or close enough?
Yes, you did.
Close
You
enough.
did.
Good.
Oh, close enough. That.
Whenever there's
Yes.
PCOS or, I beg your pardon, whenever there is PCOS and endometriosis, can you please advise? That's one comment. Do you wish to tackle that before the caller or?
So, I'll ask Dr. Daisley to just inform the listeners about what adenomyosis is, because there are a lot of persons just like with endometriosis, probably never heard that word.
Yeah, so first I'll tackle the question, the caller's comment. So we do speak a lot about adenomyosis when we do our advocacy workshops, and that we also do a lot of social media. Adenomyosis month follows endometriosis month, and we also do commemorate that as well.
And their color is a teal or purple. What is it? I can't
I
remember.
can't remember the color offhand. PCOS
I'm
is
gonna look.
teal. Yeah.
Right. I think so.
So
Theirs might be purple. I can look.
In terms of what adenomyosis is, so as I mentioned at the beginning, endometriosis is where the lining that's very similar to the endometrial tissue implants, where it shouldn't be on the inside of the abdomen. What happens with adenomyosis is this very same lining tissue implants within the muscle in the endometrium in the womb. So what happens, we have different layers that make up our womb. We have the inner layer, which is the endometrium, and then we have the myometrium, which is the muscle layer. And that's what causes us to have like the cramps and so on associated with our periods, and the cramps that's also associated with childbirth when that contracts. So the endometrium grows into that myometrium, into that muscle layer, and it also causes these ladies to have a lot of pain associated with their periods as well.
But then would it be safe to say that adenomyosis, watch me, adenomyosis. So don't worry, callers. I get it wrong sometimes too. That adenomyosis is a form of endometriosis then?
Yes, you can say
subtype.
That.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So it really, to a lady caller's fears, we probably, the association already has a lot of letters. But
yes,
it probably just means that we have to speak more about the fact that it is a type of endometriosis, but yes, it definitely comes under the same umbrella body, really and truly. Yeah. When I was looking, it's purple with yellow is what they use for their ribbons. So yeah, so it's a whole rainbow we have going on here.
But definitely, right, we'll take that into account, and we'll try to do a little bit more on adenomyosis.
We don't want them to feel left out.
Yeah, and in practice, I saw a lot of patients as well with adenomyosis. Mm-hmm. And it causes, these ladies also have very severe pain, and I definitely empathize with them. So we'll try to increase the awareness about that as well.
Yeah, and they have a lot of pain and heavy bleeding and everything, and they're having their periods. And then they can look very, they look bloated. A lot of them because the uterus starts to increase in size. All right. So our caller, I think we addressed the concern. So
you're still with us? Hello.
Yes, I'm
here. Thanks for waiting patiently. Go ahead, please.
Good evening.
Yes, good evening to the devoted doctors.
Yes, thank you.
Well, I was wondering, seeing that you're dealing with internal inflammatory processes and you're dealing with blocking cyclooxygenesis, would that have anything to do with any excess level of arachidonic acid?
I'll let Dr. Daisy tackle that one because not to my knowledge.
not to my knowledge. So just to clarify, if you're asking if, for example, if endometriosis may be caused by increased levels of arachidonic acid in the body?
Yeah, because it's an inflammatory second messenger for most pains and inciting that level of activity. So I'm just thinking, right, this is Anthony Hope calling,
I'm listening.
Have you been able to query any of those ladies and find out whether their level of arachidonic, although it's not produced by the body naturally, if it has increased due to the level of let's say they talk about the omega 3 fatty acids and all that, if any level of development has occurred due to that?
No, we haven't, but this is definitely a wonderful research question, and I will write it down because it's also one of the areas that we focus on and research. So I will definitely write that down.
That's because he had me thinking. I said, well, I've never heard it mentioned, but that it's not to say it doesn't happen, so we need to look it up.
Yes, yes.
So thank you for that, Mr. Ho.
Once you mentioned Voltaren and those, and you know that.
Mm-hmm.
Cyclooxygenase plays a very important part in that inflammatory process, not inflammation, as you have explained to the call. I was just thinking out loud about it. Pardon me.
No,
that's fine. We
want conversations to be generated about these topics. That is exactly what this show is about, educating not just the public, but challenging us as a medical fraternity to dig deep in our knowledge as well. So thank you for that. Thank you. We will definitely look into that.
You're welcome. And thank you too.
You're all welcome. Right. Have a wonderful evening.
You too. Happy Mother's Day to you all.
Thank you.
Thank you kindly, sir. We will chat. Next comment for you, Doc. This one says, good afternoon. What causes pain during a lady's period? And the second one is, in the reverse, why do some women have painless periods?
Ah,
So the pain that's associated with the periods, it's caused by two things. One, I mentioned the contraction of the muscle layer, so the myometrium, that's the muscle layer within the womb. So when ever it is that the body wants to get something out of the inner aspect of the womb or the cavity in the womb, that starts to contract. So it contracts when we have our periods, when it's trying to get the lining out. It contracts when we're in childbirth, when we're trying to get the baby out as well. Mm-hmm. And there's also an aspect of inflammation as well that occurs with the menstruation as well. So there's also inflammation that causes the pain. So it's both of those things that would cause pain related to that. And there are some ladies that do get very painless periods. I would agree with that. So what can happen is that when the womb has to get like large clots and so on, it has to contract a lot harder and a lot firmer. Mm-hmm. And that is what really tends to cause the patients to have a lot more pain. So sometimes those ladies may not be producing a lot of clots. They may have a very light flow, and therefore they may not have as much contraction and may not have as much pain.
Yeah, because generally, if you're going to have a heavier period, it's usually associated with more pain than someone who has lighter periods. So, you know, it's just... You know, and there's some of us that are favorites and some are not.
I know I have patients sometimes, and they say, I have a 3-day period. And I'm like, what? How does it feel to be God's favorite?
I know, right? Bless them. So apart from, so let's go back to managing these symptoms, right? Apart from the pain medications and surgery, is there anything else that can actually help manage some of these symptoms of endometriosis? I think we did touch on hormones, but because I think the pill.
Yeah, so there are
sometimes for some people.
Mm-hmm. There's a hormonal aspect to the management. So we can try the birth control pill. So the birth control pill can be used for not only endometriosis related and painful periods, but that can be trial for any painful period. Use it a lot in young girls as well. That helps to reduce the amount of blood flow, and that helps alleviate the pain. So that can be trialed, but more often than not, patients may be placed on medications that can actually stop the levels of lady hormone. It can actually induce a very premature menopause. So that would be kind of last resort. So you would try other things before that, but that can also help to manage the symptoms of endometriosis as well. And there are some like self-management things that persons can do. Some anecdotally, persons may say that having a diet that's very high in anti-inflammatory foods, similar to how the caller would have mentioned, things like turmeric, that can also help to kind of manage the symptoms a little better, but definitely not significant. And we would have mentioned, you briefly mentioned surgery, but sometimes surgery may be warranted depending on the stage of endometriosis. There are stages, so they can be like very mild stage one, and they can go up to very, very severe endometriosis or stage four, where it can cause things such as adhesions. So adhesions occur where the inflammation that happens in the tummy causes these bands that kind of it can either stick bowel to each other, or it can stick, for example, the tubes or some of the ligaments to each other and cause even more pain. So sometimes surgery can be done to kind of free up those areas. Surgery can also be done to remove any cysts that may have been formed from the endometriosis as well.
Right. So would it be correct then in saying that there's no real cure for endometriosis?
So at this point, yes, you'll definitely be correct in saying that.
You go ahead.
No, but saying we also don't know what causes it, so there's definitely no cure.
So then what happens with a lady who has endometriosis when she goes through menopause? What happens then, as far as the illness?
Right. So it depends on the staging. For very mild endometriosis, she may actually, her symptoms may completely resolve. So she definitely may not have any pain. But sometimes, as I mentioned, with the very severe endometriosis, that may have led to things such as adhesions, where the bowel and other areas may be stuck together. That can continue, those complications can continue postmenopausally, and the patient may still continue to have symptoms. So it depends on the staging of the endometriosis. And that kind of highlights an important point that I didn't get to touch on beforehand, which is the familial aspect. So
if you have, I did want to ask that. Is it genetic?
So we tend to find that ladies who have endometriosis, their mother or sister may have had endometriosis. And this raises a very interesting aspect of Caribbean culture that I often encounter in practices outside of endometriosis, where our older generations don't like to talk about their health. They don't.
No, they don't.
And that's so important because you could be saving your future generation's life. For example, if you are keeping to yourself that you have a history of some type of cancer and you don't share that, and those your persons may not be screened, that's quite important. So I just wanted to kind of raise that familial issue and the importance of sharing information.
Right. And that is what I love about BAPE, about the association, because we are breaking down the walls of taboo of these reproductive health topics, because a lot of young women have no idea when their mother's period would have started. You know, their mothers and grandmothers don't speak about that. They don't speak about how their periods were. They don't give you an idea of when exactly they started going through menopause and that sort of thing. And it is important to discuss this with our young women. But that is where BAPE comes in, to bridge the gap, to stand in the gap, to help, to give a community where you can get information about what is normal, what is not normal. And though it's not normal, there's still other people like you that are experiencing it. So that's what I'm really glad about. So tell me a little bit, we spoke about, because Endometriosis Month is gone. It was in March, and there were lots of activities there. But I know that you guys have something very interesting activity coming up this week, which I will be attending. And I'm sorry for those who have not registered.
Yes, I'm also sorry for them.
So tell us a little bit about it, Dr. Daisy.
Sure. So Endometriosis Month, as I mentioned, is in March, but we are hosting a filming of a documentary about endometriosis. It was produced in the USA by Hillary Clinton and Rosaria Dawson. It's entitled Below the Belt, and it details the experiences of women living with endometriosis, things that they have gone through. And also it kind of stimulates a discussion about policy and how we can best help women internationally, but we're using that to help to create a conversation in the Barbadian context.
Yeah. So it's a documentary. And I know that there's also a panel discussion after.
So I didn't mention the date. So the date of the viewing of the film is going to be on Wednesday, March 17th, from 6 p.m. until 8 p.m. And that's going to be at the museum. Fortunately, we are already at capacity for our registrants.
I'm really happy to hear that, though, because it means that there was great interest. So I'm glad that members of the public have taken the opportunity to see this film.
And we're also going to be having a policy discussion on Thursday, and we're inviting persons within various stakeholders in healthcare to come and view the film, and also to create discussions about policy surrounding endometriosis from the level of the patient up to healthcare. Yourself, Dr. Fortune Hill, helped us so much in terms of the discussions around mental health and not only endometriosis, but these reproductive disorders, because they can be quite a burden. So we're definitely thankful for you for that.
You're welcome. I love it. I do. I really love it. I love topics that people don't like to talk about. I kind of like pride myself in specializing in having uncomfortable conversations.
Interesting. I love that. I'm gonna have to reach out to you.
Having uncomfortable conversations, call me. So now that you touched on that, And you spoke about the mental health aspects of reproductive health issues. Are there any other complications that persons probably would not have even thought about? You did mention you can have like the adhesions, you can have bowel stuck to bowel, and I can't imagine that that would present itself with some abdominal issues and maybe even issues with the stool and that sort of thing. But anything else? Because I know I would have spoken about this in more than one forum. You know, there's increased association with depression and anxiety yeah. as a result of many things to yeah. do with this disorder. But are there any other associated complications that probably would never even come to people's minds?
So I'm not sure if you're talking about like medical complications or just...
Yes.
Right. So as I would have mentioned beforehand, the weird and wonderful aspects. So there have been some cases of endometriosis that implant on the lungs, and that mm-hmm. can lead to things such as like pneumothorax, which is where there's air outside of the lungs, again, where it shouldn't be. And right. that can be life-threatening. The adhesions itself can also lead to, for example, obstruction of bowel. That can also be life-threatening as well. Mm-hmm. The cysts that can also form as a result of the endometriosis, if they rupture, they can also be life-threatening. So there yeah. are many different complications. Another yeah. aspect that mm-hmm. where my mind kind of went to where you asked that question initially.
I feel like we are both thinking the same way. So let me hear.
This psychosocial aspect.
Yes.
Mental health is one. But then also things such as absenteeism at work, which is not Correct. The fault of the young lady. And if there were policies that could account for this, then both parties would be so much better off. Also it affecting things such as relationships as well.
Yes.
Up. So there's so many different aspects it can touch on.
Yeah, because having, you know, pain in intercourse is a problem because, of, you know, the natural thing then would be to avoid. So it's going to affect, it can, not going to, but can affect the, you know, the intimate relationship between you and your partner. And then infertility causes a huge strain on a relationship as well. And the infertility itself then can lead to depression and anxiety in both parties, in the man and the woman. So that's why it's important that this conversation is not just for women, because it's a female issue. It's a people issue. It's not just a female issue. It's a family issue.
Exactly.
Is what I would call it, you know?
Yeah.
So
I'm sorry. I hope I'm not throwing you off your thought process. Before you move on,
I already was. It wasn't you. Oh, okay. It was not you.
Well, let me help you here, because somebody's tasking me with asking you this. They say, is it normal for someone who is 64 years old to be still having a period? What say you?
Woo! Definitely not normal.
No, the short answer to that is no.
Okay. So I would definitely encourage that person to go see their physician, ideally a gynecologist. Also cast their mind back perhaps to when they would have last had their pap smear as well. But definitely would recommend that person go see their physician.
All right. I hope you're still listening.
So the other thing that I was going to ask about, I'm sorry if y'all can hear noise in the background. It's Thursday. So the other thing I was going to ask about, we spoke about the role of nutrition and maybe supplements, but is there any role for exercise in the management of endometriosis?
Yeah, so we often talk a lot about exercise and management of chronic illnesses on a whole. So in comparison to polycystic ovarian syndrome, where we talk a lot more about like cardio-based exercises, for endometriosis, we talk about very, very low impact exercises. So things such as yoga, swimming, stretching classes, they are very low impact and they help to alleviate the symptoms a lot more. Because what we don't want is very high impact, high intensity exercises that may even aggravate the inflammation. So low impact, very easy exercises like yoga tend to be the options that we would recommend.
Yeah, and then things like yoga can also help as far as even, you know, the non drug ways, non-pharmacological ways of managing pain as well, you know. So if you, so we had just a few more minutes, and before we go into our summary and wrapping up, how can individuals find out more about the Barbados Association of Endometriosis?
So you can definitely contact us via our Instagram, which is Endo and PCOS BB on Instagram. And then we also have our website, endoandpcosbb.com. And you can also email us at endometriosis. But you can email me. No, I will not give my email.
Not you, yes. Personally.
You can email us at endoassociationofbdos@gmail.com. And we also have our Twitter, which is also Endo and PCOSBB. And our Facebook, we're trying to grow now again, is also Endo and PCOSBB. So majority of the things are Endo and PCOSBB.
Good. So you can just, I mean, even if somebody kind of, the truth is, if you go into Google, are you typing endometriosis Barbados? The first thing that's going to pop up is the association.
Yes.
And there's a lot of information and resources there, and you will be able to stay tuned for all of their upcoming educational events. And I want to stress again, this is a nonprofit organization. So yes. We are not promoting anything here. There's no financial gain.
No.
This is all about empowering our young women particularly, but families, and supporting persons who have these conditions. At a later date, I'm going to ask Dr. Dizzy to come back so that we can talk about PCOS, because that is probably even more commonly seen than endometriosis. So if you could just give us some take-home points, Dr. Dizzy, just to wrap up the conversation.
So first of all, I would like to say that pain associated with your period that affects your productivity and causes you not, for example, not to get out of bed is not normal. So definitely have a conversation with your physician. If you may not be in a position to have a conversation with your physician, you can reach out to us at any of the contact information I would have listed. We're always very responsive, and we often will point you in the correct direction of where you would need to go. We're definitely very helpful. I'm happy to help anyone. Also, I want to encourage young ladies and women on a whole to be their own advocate as a patient. As I would have mentioned, in terms of the time to diagnosis, we want to work to reducing that. So ensuring you're advocating for yourself. If you think that something isn't right with your body, definitely encourage you to advocate for that. And I also like my last point to be around men and their partners. I want to encourage men to be supportive of their partners, not only with endometriosis, but with all reproductive disorders, whether it be fibroids, which is very common with our population, adenomyosis, polycystic ovarian syndrome. Encourage you to be empathetic and to open the channels of communication between you and your partner.
Yes, I agree. And to touch on to that, the maintain open lines of communication between our young women, our young girls, and the older women in our society, in families, in churches, in communities. Because, you know, you may have some young women may not have a granny, they may not have a mommy in their life, you know. So it may be the neighbor, their friend's mommy, the mother of their friend from school, who this may be your opportunity to help a young woman, to educate a young woman. And you don't have to know everything, you know? It's just to be open about what you may have experienced and what you're comfortable sharing. But I would like us to get comfortable being uncomfortable a little. So, you know, share a little bit more than you normally would. Say, well, like, before this conversation, nobody, you know, a lot of people are not as open to say they started having their period at 8 years old, but I did, you know. And Dr. Daisley similarly can say she had her period earlier. There are a lot of people who don't tell you about that. So you feel like you're the only person that was happening to, you know. And it's a hard thing to get your period in primary school. That's the issue. To start having your period in primary school, because it's not normal. Well, not normal, but it's not common, I should say. So you feel very ostracized. yeah. at that age. So it's to have these open conversations, you know, then you might find out your mother used to be nearly passing out every month too and vomiting in her early years. And you thought it was just you. That's the point where then you can say, okay, well, no, this is something serious. Let me go and talk to my doctor about this.
So, all right. Let me just interrupt you one quick moment, because he promises to make this question very quick. And since we're almost out of time.
No problem.
Go ahead, sir. Make it quick for us, please.
Yeah, really quickly. Good evening. And Yes, thank you very much. Good evening. Can a woman who has endometriosis have a perfect pregnancy? And does she go through menopause shorter than women who don't have it? In other words, does she reach the age of menopause before 40, 45? Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, sir. Go ahead, Dr. Daisy.
Sure. I would have liked to get a little bit more information regarding what he defines. It's okay.
That's perfect. Right?
A perfect pregnancy.
Because I feel like there's no such thing. Yeah. But yes.
But I think he means
complications.
Yeah. So it's possible. Right. So again, it depends on the staging of the endometriosis. Correct. So if it's like a very mild stage, you definitely can have a uncomplicated
fairly pregnancy. Normal, right? Yeah. Uncomplicated pregnancy. Yeah.
But as I think the point he was trying to raise is that it definitely could pose them to be a high risk pregnancy as well.
Right.
So that's why having the discussions with your gynecologist is very important early in the pregnancy. The second point was around menopause. So hasn't been any literature that shows that endometriosis leads to any premature menopause. Right. What I can say though is that sometimes endometriosis can implant on the ovaries if there's any surgical intervention that could possibly lead to that. And also the medication.
Elicit
that. So I'll end there.
So thank you so much for having us again, Gregson. And thank you, Dr. Daisley. And you guys will hear from Dr. Daisley later on in the year. We are going to have more of these discussions because BAPE is a wonderful association for educating the general public. So we are going to utilize them a little more later in the year.
No problem. Thank you so much for having me, Dr. Forrestin Hill, and thank you so much to Gregson and to the general public for listening.
Okay, wonderful.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, but we have come to the end of this edition of the Better Health Radio Show. But tune in next weekend. This weekend, we had our presenter, Dr. Ford St. Hill, and she had as our guest, Dr. Rashida Daisley, and she's promised to bring her back in the future for more information on these and other related topics. So thank you kindly to both of you. Have yourselves a wonderful evening. And look, I'm not going to ask Dr. Ford if she's going to be here next weekend. I'll wait, and we'll surprise you all with who's the presenter.
It's true.
Next week.
But there's a high probability.
Okay. Well, if that's the case, we're happy to have you. All right. Take care of yourself.
Yes.
All right.
So we'll see. Bye-bye.
All right. That's Dr. Ford St. Hill and Dr. Daisley there for you.